Welcome to the new reality edition of Bite Marks Cafe right here on Hawaii Public Radio, HPR1, where we serve you the first bite of today's science, technology, and innovation. I'm Bert Lum. And on today's show, we have astrobiologist Dr. Karen Meech. She's a faculty chair over at the Institute for Astronomy over at the University of Hawaii, and she's here to give us the facts about 3i Atlas. Karen, I want to welcome you to Bite Marks Cafe.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
Now, Karen, I've had you on before, and interestingly enough, it was about 2i. At that time, it was Oumuamua, and that was several years ago. I would like to give you a chance to share with us a little bit about, you know, your work as an astrobiologist. And interestingly, you're actually at a conference right now in Arizona about comets. So tell us a little bit about the work that you do over at the IFA.
Well, comets are the leftover building blocks of solar systems. Mm-hmm. So the conference I'm at here in Tucson is to try and understand what they can tell us about how planets form both here and elsewhere. And that's the connection to these interstellar objects, because they're the leftover building blocks of planet formation from another star system.
And just from the fact that, you know, we've had you on, it was like back in 2021, it was talking about Oumuamua. It was kind of like the second interstellar object that was kind of in the popular realm. And then this is, what, four years later, we've got 3i Atlas. It must be more frequent than that, right? I mean, is it uncommon for these objects to be traversing, you know, sort of like the vast space getting to us here in the solar system?
Well, you know, this one is the third one, and Oumuamua was actually the first one. We don't think that it's uncommon. It's just that we're discovering them now because we have telescope surveys like Pan-STARRS and Atlas in Hawaii that are surveying the sky every night.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
So to find these things, you really need to look faint, and you need to look everywhere. You know, 1i was discovered by Pan-STARRS. 2i was discovered by an amateur astronomer doing something that most big telescopes don't do.
Mm-hmm.
He was observing in twilight really close to the horizon. And then 3i was discovered by Atlas, the Chilean Atlas telescope. And this was pretty remarkable because it was passing in front of the galactic plane where there's lots and lots of stars. So this was a challenging discovery.
And explain a little bit about where these objects come from. I mean, obviously it's interstellar, it's outside of our solar system. What is, you know, what are the astronomic community kind of assessing as to its origin?
Well, we really do want to understand how you form a solar system like ours, how you build the planets, and we want to see if the process is the same everywhere.
Mm.
You know, obviously you have the same chemicals that are formed at the Big Bang, the start of the universe, but it doesn't necessarily mean that as a star is forming elsewhere, it has the same relative abundance of all these chemicals.
Mm-hmm.
So the important thing about these interstellar objects is that we have a piece of another star system that comes close enough for us to study in detail, and that's the only way that will ever happen. So we're looking to see if these things are the same physically as comets in our solar system, which are the icy leftovers, and if they're the same physically or if they have the same chemistry. So that's the main goal of studying these.
And when you study it from the IFA perspective, are you doing it with kind of a collaboration with others at IFA or even with other, let's say, universities, and you have a kind of like a consortium of astronomers that are collaborating together? How does your work sort of interface and interact with other astronomers?
Well, it's really both. Obviously, the whole comet community is very excited because there's only been three, so everybody is trying to get telescope time
mm-hmm.
to study these. And we have a network of close collaborators at other universities, both in the U.S. and elsewhere. But also, it's been very exciting how many of the astronomers that normally do not study comets at the Institute for Astronomy have gotten very excited. And many of them, including a lot of graduate students, have donated telescope time that would have been for their thesis project to get a quick paper out on the 3i. And so it's been fun seeing the excitement from everybody.
So can you describe a little bit about the process? Let's say, as you just described, you have a grad student, they have got telescope time, they're making observations. What are they gathering? What kind of data would be informative of a paper that gets published? What is it that they might be looking at?
Well, we want to know how big the object is, and that depends on how much light gets reflected off of the surface and how reflective that surface is, whether it's dark or bright.
Mm-hmm.
3i actually has a lot of gas and dust coming off, so you can't actually see the surface, so getting the size is challenging. You also want to know about the chemistry, and so we use instruments called spectrographs that can actually break the light into its individual wavelengths and give us a chemical fingerprint, and that's what really gives us some of the science. And other things, we want to know how fast these things are rotating. In part, that's just generally interesting, but it tells us a little bit about how to interpret some of the data that we see.
Now, one of the things that you can help me understand, the path of entry into the solar system by 3i Atlas was considered very unique as compared to some other comets. Could you describe what it is that's so unique about it?
Well, anything that's bound to our sun, so that's orbiting the sun in our solar system, either has a circular orbit or an elliptical, sort mm-hmm. of an elongated circle. Any of these interstellar objects, because they are not gravitationally bound to our sun, they come through more or less on either a straight line or kind of a bent line, because as it gets closer to the sun, the gravitational pull of the sun will alter the orbit. And so these come in very fast. And the first one came very close to the sun. Oumuamua was inside the orbit of Mercury.
Mm-hmm.
2i was farther out, a little bit beyond Mars's orbit. And 3i is kind of in between the two, just a little inside the orbit of Mars. And, you know, we're lucky with 2i and 3i that they're going to be visible for quite a long period of time, giving us great opportunity to study them. Although right now it's still behind the sun and we can't look at it from Earth.
You know, and I think there's a lot of interesting, I guess, characteristics about this particular 3i Atlas. And I'd love to have you share a little bit about your observations and conclusions about, you know, perhaps composition and path and speed that it's going. So I want to hold that thought. We'll be right back at this short break to continue our conversation with Dr. Karen Meech. She's an astrobiologist and the faculty chair over at the Institute for Astronomy. This is Bite Marks Cafe.
Support for Bite Marks Cafe comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk shows. Mahalo to contributors PCAT, Pacific Center for Advanced Technology Training, and the Rice Partnership.
Welcome back. This is Bite Marks Cafe right here on Hawaii Public Radio, HPR 1. I'm Bert Lum. If you're just joining us, we're talking to Dr. Karen Meech, faculty chair over at the Institute for Astronomy, and we're talking about the interstellar comet called 3i Atlas. And right before the break, Karen, you were saying that, you know, the path of 3i Atlas coming into our solar system, I mean, it is passing a bunch of the planets, right? And it is right now kind of behind the sun. Is that somewhat of a unique path into our solar system? As compared to some other comets, as well as some of the other 3i and 1i and 2i?
Well, the paths of 1i and 2i were different from 3i. People have remarked that it seemed unusual that 3i was passing by a lot of the planets.
Mm-hmm.
But these objects they can come from anywhere in space, so they can come from any direction. And it just happens that 3i is coming in near the plane of the solar system. You know, all the planets orbit more or less in the same plane. And if something comes in along that plane, chances are pretty good it's going to pass some of the planets, which is fortunate because there's a lot of spacecraft flying now that have their various missions. And so there's been plans for a lot of these spacecraft to actually turn and look at 3I.
You know, one of the things that seemed to be, I don't know if it's observed or it was shared out on social media, was the varying speed of 3I Atlas as it started to pass the various planets. What is that? Is that in fact true? I mean, is it a constant speed that 3I Atlas is traveling, or does it kind of speed up, slow down? What is the what is it that you have observed?
Well, we're not particularly observing the speed, but anything as it approaches the sun is going to speed up, and that's just normal physics of anything in the solar system. So even a comet in our own solar system, as it approaches the sun, will go faster. So there's nothing unusual about that.
Now, what about any observations in terms of composition that you can share with us? I mean, okay, so I you know, when you talk about a, I guess a typical comet, you talk about, you know, the water that might be outgassed. Are there, and there, and then there's iron, I guess, that could be also detected. What is it? Is it true that, you know, 3I Atlas had indications of nickel?
That's correct. Most comets, I mean, all comets are very rich in ices. And the primary ices that we see are water, carbon dioxide, and carbon monoxide. We didn't actually detect gases, but they must have been there. We just couldn't see it. It was only visible for a short time. 2I was very rich in carbon monoxide, and 3I is different from the other two. It's very carbon dioxide rich. But as it's gotten closer to the sun and bright enough for many observatories, they've seen many of the normal minor species that we see in comets, like cyanide and other organic compounds. But they're also seeing nickel and iron. And these have been seen in comets before. We're not entirely sure of the thing that's creating the nickel and iron. It's some sort of chemical compound on the surface that's releasing these. But, you know, the comets are a mixture of ices and dust. So it's nothing unusual, but it's the ratio of nickel and iron is a little bit different from what we've seen before, and that's interesting. So we have to understand what's causing that.
Now, there was other speculation of how the comet tail, you know, typically would be going away from the sun because of the, let's say, the direction of plasma that's, you know, being ejected from the sun. Has the speculation of the comet tail pointing toward the sun, is that a false kind of speculative observation?
No, actually, when it was first observed and discovered, there was a little bit of gas and dust that was heading towards the sun. And what normally happens is the sunlight warms up the ices and they turn into a gas and that pushes the dust away. And, you know, obviously the sunward facing side is going to be the warmest. Usually if it's really tiny dust, the sunlight itself exerts a push on the dust and that sweeps it into a tail. It's believed that the first dust that came off was actually quite big, and the bigger particles are not as subject to that push from the sunlight. And it was only later, once smaller dust was starting to come off, that it started to form what we would think of as the normal tail that's behind the comet.
And where are these observations coming from? Is it from, you know, satellites that are sort of orbiting planets? Because this is, you're talking about a pretty small object, right? That's traveling through our solar system. I mean, how are people actually analyzing it and getting the kind of detail that gives you these kinds of results?
Well, the comet itself, the solid body, is relatively small. It's less than probably 3 kilometers in radius.
Mm-hmm.
But the gas and dust that comes off in a typical comet can stretch out 100,000 to a million miles, depending on, you know, how much gas and dust is coming off.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're actually seeing with the telescopes is relatively large in terms of the actual physical size. You know, of course, it's a small angular size in the sky.
Mm-hmm.
So many of these images are just made from ground-based telescopes. Many of the ones in Mauna Kea, the Gemini telescope, had some of the first really deep, nice-looking images. I know many of the spacecraft are trying to get images
mm-hmm.
of comets. And the advantage of doing that is that they are at a different place in the solar system than the Earth, and they can turn and look at the comet where we can't see it because it's behind the sun.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The problem with that is all of these spacecraft were never intended to look at comets, you know, a million miles away. For example, the Mars spacecraft are intended to look at the bright surface of Mars.
Mm-hmm,
right. And so these are challenging observations. They're not that sensitive to faint things, and they're not designed to track something that's moving really fast.
Now, the other thing that seems to be, you know, observed, and again, you help me dispel whether this is true or not, that there's like color change, and that it's comparatively bluer now as it, you know, gets closer or close to the sun.
Well, you can get, most comets are covered in organic-rich material, and that tends to be reddish.
Mm-hmm.
If you have ices, they tend to reflect more of the blue sunlight. So you can get color changes if you had ices in this gas and dust cloud that eventually turn into a gas and disappear, and so you could get a color change from blue to redder. Also, the apparent color that we see can depend on how big the dust grains are.
Mm-hmm.
So really tiny dust, like the size of what you'd find in cigarette smoke, you know, really small,
mm-hmm.
tends to reflect the light more strongly in the blue. So it's a combination of composition and particle size.
You know, I've seen a lot of information, and my sources are nowhere as authentic as yours, so I'm kind of reflecting some of the speculative things that I might hear on social media, and I'm you know, curious to hear your thoughts on perhaps some of the things that might be shared on those popular platforms, but then also I'd like to hear your thoughts on why there has been, let's say, a void of information coming from some of the other space agencies, like, you know, the European Space Agency, or obviously NASA. You know, they're on, they're not in operation right now because of the federal shutdown. And then of course, similarly, like the China Space Agency hasn't really said anything about observations on 3I Atlas. So I'm kind of curious to hear your thoughts on the lack of information, and then also I'd like to kind of hear your thoughts on how some of the sort of like the popular influencers are speculating on 3I Atlas and how that's influencing sort of overall sentiment about, you know, about 3I Atlas. So we want to kind of like hold that thought, and we will be back after this very short break to continue our conversation with Dr. Karen Meech. She's an astrobiologist and faculty chair over at the Institute for Astronomy. And of course, this is Bite Marks Cafe. Welcome back. This is Bite Marks Cafe. I'm Bert Lum right here on Hawaii Public Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're talking to Dr. Karen Meech. We're talking about 3I Atlas. Of course, she's the faculty chair and has been following this particular interstellar object and is actually at a conference in Tucson, Arizona to talk about comets. And of course, right before the break, Karen, you know, we were sort of talking about the information that you as astronomer, the astronomy community has been gathering and studying and reporting on. And then a lot of the popular, let's say, speculation about 3i Atlas is being shared on social media, whether it's Facebook or Instagram or TikTok. And I'd like you to comment on, you know, why there might be a lack of information coming from the, you know, astronomy community.
Well, right now, you know, when the comet gets closest to its sun, this one is not visible because it's behind the sun.
Mm-hmm.
So people from Earth and ground-based observatories can't observe it right now. However, many of the spacecraft that are flying right now in space and conducting their own missions are at a position where they could turn and look at it. And I know many of them either have done so or have plans to do so. The point of view of the NASA observations, because, of course, of the government shutdown, these are government employees, so mm-hmm. they probably are not working on the data, although I'm sure that they set up the sequences to take the observations before the shutdown. And then secondly, once you get data like this, these spacecraft were never designed to look at a faint moving object like a comet, for example, mm-hmm. the Mars spacecraft are, you know, designed to look at the surface of Mars, which is really bright. So it's actually quite challenging once you get the data back to Earth to interpret it and get a something that's worthy of a press release. So that could be some of a delay. Now, with regard to what's happening in the social media, you know, these things are exciting. It's something from another star system. And, of course, it's always tempting to speculate, is it a natural phenomenon? And, you know, that's fine. That's a process of science. You ask questions, and then you seek, what is the evidence that supports my hypothesis? Fortunately, I think some of the community has gotten too excited and gone overboard in interpreting this as something that is not natural. And there's absolutely no evidence of that. This looks like a comet with a slightly different chemistry, and that's wildly exciting for the scientists because it gives us a glimpse of how another star system was born.
Well, one of the popular voices on social media is an astronomer by the name of Avi Loeb, and he has come out and speculated quite wildly of 3i Atlas being alien technology. You know, and his credentials are fairly respectable. I mean, what can people like myself who are just interested in consuming some of this make of, you know, a bona fide astronomer that's out there talking about pretty wild speculative stuff?
Well, he is not publishing papers on this highly speculative stuff anymore because the refereed journals say that there just isn't the evidence.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's doing this to get some attention. The sad thing is that it is not teaching the proper way to do science, which is evidence-based. You know, I would have been perfectly happy if he said, what evidence would it take to let us believe that this was alien technology, as opposed to just declaring it is
mm-hmm.
without any evidence whatsoever. I think the science alone is wildly exciting. You don't have to add aliens in there.
Yeah, I love how some folks, when it's unexplainable, will immediately leap to, you know, alien technology. another fairly popular physicist's name, his name is Michio Kaku. He has come out and said some, you know, pretty interesting things. The thing that I observe about his, let's say, talks on social media is that it started to look like it was AI generated. And as soon as it starts to look like that, I think it will give you the impression that maybe all of it is, you know, AI generated. So who knows how truthful it is. And that puts a lot of doubt in people's minds. But for those that are perhaps not as discerning, what would you say about how they would be able to tell whether something is a little bit, you know, out of the realm of possibilities, given that it could be a deep fake, it could be, you know, AI generated.
You know, AI is a wonderful tool in many ways, but you can't trust what it produces. You always have to verify. And so when I've used AI to look up resources, I will always ask it to show me the refereed paper. And, you know, there's so many papers coming out on 3i that are not yet published, but people have submitted them for, you know, prestigious journals, but they're downloading them onto the archive, which is a place for scientists to communicate their science before it's published, while it's still in the review process. So that's a good place to find a bona fide data. Also, once we're out of the government shutdown, NASA will have plenty of resources on its web about 3i, because the public is very excited about this. So I think these are two good places to look. And then contact universities if you're very curious, because there's almost certainly astronomers working on 3i right now.
So you mentioned the archive. Is that what URL are you referring to?
I usually find it by just typing ARXIV, and then it will bring you to this public archive where astronomers upload their papers, and there's a nice search feature, so you could just type in 3i, and it will list all the papers that have 3i as one of the topics.
So what you're saying is that basically a lot of the data is coming in, but it takes time to analyze that data. And not only do you have to analyze the data, but then you have to write the paper that gets published. So that all takes time. So a lot of the stuff that's actually speculative that's out there is people just speculating. It's not based on anything that's necessarily published, right? So really, if you really want to get the truth of the matter, you kind of got to wait for the published papers, right?
That's correct. And papers are coming out lightning fast on this one. You know, a normal paper might take 6 or 7 months, and we're getting papers coming out in 3 to 4 weeks because people are really motivated to do a good job on their science and share it with the community.
So what would you suggest people do, and what can you do, Karen, to help perhaps get the Institute for Astronomy to, you know, start helping to fill that void so that the truth comes out?
Well, I think this discussion has shown me that we really need to have a web page with just some of the facts of 3i and where you can get images, where you can download the papers. And I will talk to my colleagues about getting something like that up for the public.
Well, you know, when you do that, be sure to let me know, and I will put that out either on our newsletter or somewhere so that people can access it and find out more about the truth about 3i Atlas. Karen Meech is an astrobiologist and the faculty chair over at the Institute for Astronomy at the University of Hawaii. Karen, I want to thank you for joining me today.
It's my pleasure.
And thank you for listening to Bite Marks Cafe. Join us next week when we'll talk to the folks over at Shifted Energy. If you miss any part of this edition, you can find the podcast of tonight's show on bitemarkscafe.org. Our engineer is David Chong. You can catch us on HPR One every Friday or anytime via the HPR app or your favorite podcast application. In the meantime, you stay safe, you stay awesome. We'll see you next week on another edition of Bite Marks Cafe.